and try to go over what I didn't get to this morning. I did a quick flyover at the end. I want to talk about, again, the model of preaching. Typically, what is pushed upon us in seminary, in many seminaries, is to use the law-gospel category. In other words, what the law-gospel category, you find this especially used in Lutheran churches, because law-gospel was the distinction that Martin Luther came up with. It's how he understood and almost looked at everything as, in terms of law and gospel. It's now crept over into the Reformed world even more than it was previously, although it's always had a presence in the Reformed world. It's especially articulated and pushed by the R2K guys, this emphasis of law and gospel. In theory, what they're doing is okay, but it can be taken too far. In theory, what they're saying is that the law has to do its work. And so the minister in his sermon is responsible to set forth God's law in its first use. And so a sermon, according to this mindset, what a sermon should do is to take the hot needle of God's law and ram it through you. Right? And all of us, even as Christians, need to be presented with God's law in its first use. All of us need to be reminded that we are what? Sinners. Okay? And the Heidelberg Catechism does just that, as I said quickly, in the first four Lord's Day. The first four Lord's Day is setting forth the law in its first use. The law in its first use is the idea of the law as being a street lamp. And its responsibility is to expose what? Sin. Alright? So in the law and gospel sermon, what the Lutheran pastor and the R2K pastor is doing is they're especially trying to set forth and pull away all the defenses that we use in order to avoid the fact that we are guilty of breaking God's law. Right? So that will often be the first part of the sermon. It's probing. It's seeking to expose you. But then the second part of the sermon is then gospel. Having been exposed to the law, having once again seen your sinfulness, having again once again been reminded of your hopelessness, then what comes through at the second part of the sermon is the idea of the gospel. That even though you are sinners, it's okay because Jesus Christ is your righteousness. Right? He's your covering. He's your justification. He's your mercy seat. He's your propitiation. The blood of Christ covers us from our sin because He paid for our sin. And so this is the idea of law and gospel. But I want to be very clear here. Law in its first use and then the gospel. But then we're confronted by the idea of what Jonathan Edwards loved to write. And he loved to write things like, the law and gospel doth sweetly comply. And Rush Dooney likewise talked about how the law and gospel comply. And so we have to be careful that we don't set too much of an antithesis between law and gospel. Now, the antithesis is clearly there if you're talking about the first use and then the gospel itself, which the gospel is the relief of the first use. Because you wouldn't want to give people the law and then tell them, go out and do better. Right? Because what would you create by doing that? A mess is right. You'd create self-righteousness. You'd either create self-righteousness where people were leaving, telling themselves they were succeeding, or you'd create despair. Because they would see what? They could never meet that standard, right? And so if you only gave the law without the gospel, you'd create, as you said, a mess, right? But if you give law and gospel without also then giving law again, only this time in its third use, you're potentially creating people who are not rising up to manfully fight against what? Sin. So I'm contending that sermons, if we're going to model them on this accord, that we model them as law, gospel, law. But only in its third use, not in its first use. Make sense? So, when we talk about the law in its first use, we see our sin, we're exposed to it, we're honest about our sinfulness before Christ. When we come to the gospel, we're reminded that our only hope is in Jesus Christ and His finished work. Then we move to the third use of the law, and that answers the issue of sanctification. We have this gratitude that we've been delivered from Christ, delivered by Christ from the accusations of the law, And now our response is, praise God, I've been rescued. How now can I live in order to do what? Please Him. That's right. And so we go on then to the third use of the law. And the third use of the law supplied the answer as for the law as a guide to life. Right? Paul says to Titus that he describes Christians as the people who are zealous for good works. And how do we know what good works are? The Catechism tells us only that which comes from faith and are in accordance with God's law. And then it talks about the work of the Spirit too. Right? So we understand that our sermonizing needs to include the third use of the law, because if we don't, what we get is conviction of sin, we get the idea of justification, but then we never get the idea of what? Sanctification, that's right. But yet, even when we get the third use of the law, we must still find ourselves returning back to the first use of the law, so we don't find ourselves thinking, hey, I'm getting pretty good at this righteousness thing. So this first use of the law, this third use of the law, this gospel, they work in tandem. And we have to remind ourselves that the antithesis is never just between law and gospel. It's between the seed of the serpent and the seed of the woman. And if we only preach law and gospel, then we don't get the application. And there are some quarters, especially within our 2K thinking, where application is verboten. You don't give application, because that would be, starts with an L, ends with an ism. It'd be legalism, right? So we have to understand, though, when we're over here preaching on the third use of the law as a guide to life, the pastor isn't teaching you how you can curry and earn your favor into heaven. Right? That's not the purpose at that point. We can never use the law to climb into God's presence. The only way we can enter into God's presence is how? Through the blood of Jesus Christ. But having been given that great gift, every person rises in gratitude, and the Catechism teaches us in the third section, every person rises and say, out of gratitude, and says, now how can I live for your glory? And that's what the third section of the Catechism does. And I mentioned this in sweeping fashion this morning, but what we're saying here is just what the Catechism gives us in its structure. The first 4 days is law. Day 5 through day 31 gives us gospel. Lord's Day 32 day through 52 is all about gratitude, or the law as a guide to life. Remember, when you start the Heidelberg Catechism, what do you start with? You start with the law, but it's in its first use. When you get to the day 32, now what are you examining? You're also examining the law, specifically the Ten Commandments, but in the idea of how it is that you're supposed to live in light of the fact that you're a Christian. So law, gospel, law. Right? And we have to say that the Lutherans and the R2K folks really, really don't like that. Well, you know what's interesting? When you come to Exodus 20, I am the Lord thy God who brought thee out of Egypt, a land of slavery. What is that? What is that proclamation? God's gospel. This is what I've done. Now in light of that, what? Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Right? So the purpose at that point is to tell Israel how it is they can live in light of the fact that they've been given what? Grace. I am the Lord thy God who delivered thee from the house of bondage, from the land of slavery. That is what I did. And you didn't do anything to contribute to. I did it all. That's grace. And then he speaks to them the law. I would suggest to you it's in its third use. It's telling the people how to live. But of course, we understand the law also has the purpose, as we said earlier, in its first use. So it's incredibly powerfully important that we understand these distinctions of how these different usages of the law. And I have to wind down now because it's 7:06, but let's talk briefly about the second use. The second use is called the politicus use. That's the one that we haven't mentioned. It could be used in the third use with the politicus usus. The second use of the law is how governments use the law in order to direct the living affairs of its social orders. So that all government policies and all government laws should find themselves, if you pull on the thread long enough — it's not this way anymore, but if you pull on the thread long enough, ideally you find the legislation is a reflection, or is somehow connected to the Decalogue. Okay? Right. Now I understand there are some here that don't think we should have legislators, but we would all agree with this, that if we're going to be ruled as a people, It ought to be by the second use of the law, that is, by God's law. And when Alfred the Great put forth his great Book of Doom as a law for the Anglo people, for much of it, he just cut out portions of the Old Testament and said, here's your law. Okay? So I just gave you the highlights of this. I will only say this in ending. When you only give law gospel, then really you have an anthropocentric sermon. Because it's ending on man has now been relieved of God's just wrath, right? This is a very Lutheran way to think. It's not a Reformed way to think. The Lutheran law gospel methodology is anthropocentric. The reason that the Reformed, which goes on to say law gospel, third use of the law, is theocentric. Well, I hope that you could think through it to answer that yourself, but I'll give it here quickly. The reason it's theocentric is because it's not stopping on the fact that I've been relieved of my sin. Now it's answering, how do I live for the glory of God? And so again, we see it's God-centered. So this is a subtle nuance between Reformed preaching and what's typical Lutheran preaching. I was told just recently that by a Lutheran that, yeah, it's always the same. We come into the church, we hear about our sin, we're reminded that we're rescued, but we're never given instructions on in terms of how it is that we should live out the Christian life. Now, I'm sure not all Lutheran churches are that way, but that was just his one observation. All right, I took an extra 6 minutes from you, but any questions or comments this evening? Did I see a hand there? Okay, let's stand for the...